All right, everybody. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of In Liberty and Health. And today we're going to be talking about informed consent, inserts, medical stuff, and your rights, basically. Kind of, I don't want to say back to basic libertarianism stuff, because this is kind of outside of that, but I think it's kind of included in the whole discussion around property rights and consent, which obviously, if you've listened to some of the conversations I've had in the last year or so, we all kind of talk about how consent and stuff like that isn't necessarily the number one guiding thing for morality. But when it comes to making informed medical decisions, which obviously I'm all about here, and when I've discussed Ozempic and even vaccines and stuff like that, that's always kind of been the angle that I've taken, is that you need to know as much as possible and, you know, kind of weigh your risks and benefits here. So I'm sure we'll get into that kind of stuff today. But before we get into today's conversation, make sure you go to all the links below to figure out where you can find my guests, myself, everything she's got going on, everything I've got going on. TigerFitness.com, as you can see, I'm all Tiger Fitness out today. The new Make America Healthy Again hat from Tiger Fitness. They asked if it was a Kennedy hat today when I wore this to work, and no, it's not a Kennedy hat, it's a Tiger Fitness one. But I do support the overall raising awareness of the health condition of America. So make sure you go to tigerfitness.com/KyleM and use code Kyle at checkout to get a little discount when you go to Tiger Fitness and go do all your shopping for supplements, protein bars, and all that stuff through them. Go to foxandsonscoffee.com, use code Kyle at checkout to let Steve and I sent you, and deemed fit through the link below, which should auto-populate the code SARAM25 to get some clothes, and that helps support first responders. So without further ado, let's get into today's conversation.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with autopay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
And welcoming to the show, Alexandra from Just the Inserts. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, of course. So why don't you tell my audience who you are and what you do?
My name's Alexandra. I run an account called Just the Inserts. I'm a mom of three young kids, and I actually also have a heart for fitness. So it's perfect that we're here today. I was a active duty military officer in the Air Force, was working at the Pentagon, super long hours, was completely stressed out. I was great at my job, but I hated it. And when I got out of the military, I dyed my hair pink and I went to yoga teacher training at a CrossFit gym the same week, just to like detox all of the stuff that I went through when I was military. And then I ended up teaching bar and had my group fitness prenatal. And then I had started having children. I've kind of just had them back to back. So I still value fitness. I'm not as well as I used to be, but yeah, so I definitely feel like I am part of your community here. It resonates a lot to what I do, because I feel like with fitness, you have to have some kind of a love of the biological events that occur when you're working out, when you're taking care of your body with supplements and things like that. And so what I do is I take the level of research that you would do for a creatine or a protein powder or a certain type of exercise, and I do that for medical products. So what I do is I find the manufacturer inserts for all kinds of pharmaceuticals, prescriptions, over the counters and vaccines, some blood products, some medical devices as well. And I just take all the information from the manufacturer and from our government's entities like the CDC, FDA, NIH, and I just put it all in a very digestible manner for you to get the informed consent that you deserve before you accept, delay, or decline any or all medical products. 99.9% of what I have on my website and through my social media and my book is from .gov resources. I'm the type of person where I don't want to replace your research. I want to streamline your research. So I cite everything I say, and I welcome you to go verify it yourself. There are plenty of people that ask me what they would do if I was in their situation. And I will never answer that because each of us has our own freedom of choice. We all have our own unique situations, and we just need to step into that authority and that responsibility over our bodies and make those most informed decisions. So a big chunk of what I do is going through the inserts. And then the other chunk of what I do is just talking about the importance of informed consent, how you can exercise that in your medical relationships with your provider, how you can exercise that talking about certain medical products like vaccines with your family and friends that can be quite polarizing. So those are the kind of two sections of my mission, is talking about the inserts and then how to have productive conversations about the products, whether you, no matter you, what you decide.
Right. Well, I'm sure that you've probably found it enlightening and entertaining that I don't know how much time you spend in what political community, but obviously there's, if you're kind of in the podcasting sphere, if you will, then I think I come from more of like a right-leaning libertarian background. And a lot of people are absolutely rightfully skeptical ever since 2020 of all research out of anything, anywhere, anytime. But one thing that I've found is that much that I'm sure you're probably aware of, that when you just look into some of the studies and some of the stuff that are that is being promoted, sometimes you find that, oh, they're promoting some of the stuff on very, very shoddy data. And then sometimes, you know, hey, maybe there is actually legitimate data behind some of the stuff that people are promoting. But, you know, it's not always like every single institution is flawed top to bottom and they're always selling faulty products or something like that. It's like, okay, well, if you want to take the time and diligence, it's not easy, but you can get the answers you're looking for if you're patient. But once again, to go through papers like I've done for health and fitness stuff, it's time consuming and it's very, very, I don't want to say heavy, but and not necessarily like not English, but it's very dense. Like, yes, there's a lot of information in there. And if you don't know how to read it, then it could be very, very difficult. So I'm not exactly sure what the question here is, but basically just that, like, when you start reading studies, you see that, like, oh, sometimes the information is just right there in the open.
Yeah. And you kind of have to get really good at reading studies to understand, like, for example, with vaccines, most of the safety studies that have been done, when we think of a placebo, we think of an inert substance like saline water or a sugar pill or something like that. But most of the placebos that have been done for the safety studies with vaccines are other vaccines or that same vaccine, but it's administered a few days or weeks or months later. And then most of the time too, there are special populations that are withheld in the preclinical and clinical trial data. So that's pregnant women, children, geriatric, maybe people with renal failure or heart conditions or things like that. So it's really important to realize, and this is what I really hound on, especially for the vaccine industry, is that when a product comes to market, it's not necessarily known the rare or delayed adverse reactions, depending on how that product was brought to market through the FDA. We can talk about the COVID one if you want, since that's pretty controversial. But that being emergency use authorized, a lot of the safety cautions that were typically used were bypassed. And even you could argue that some of the ones that were set up that went through all of those safety studies, still there can be some loopholes and there still can be some concerns. And even the CDC says that there might not be reactions known until millions of people take that product. So I focus on the post-marketing adverse reaction surveillance systems. Those are the VAERS and the FAERS, so the vaccine adverse event reaction system. And that's, we heard a lot about that of, well, anyone can submit to that. Well, yes, that's true. However, if you submit a fraudulent report to the VAERS system, you could be fined or you could go to jail. So it is a way that the government tries to track all of these adverse events afterward. And there's been plenty of things that are really concerning about products that weren't known when they were in clinical trials. And it's just important for us to be aware of that, especially if we're in one of those groups, being pregnant, or we saw one of the COVID vaccines had heart concerns for young males. And so we need to know that. If our government knows it, our manufacturer knows it, we need to know it too, to be informed consumers.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to talk to you about Ozempic in a little bit, but I see a lot of people kind of taking treatments like that. And maybe we could start with the COVID vaccine and hopefully we can kind of be within YouTube's good graces. It seems like they've kind of rolled back, you know, the rules a little bit. I've had a few shows taken down over this, but I remember reading a study and it was called Noam Barta et al. And if I remember correctly, I think I took the evidence that they gave in that study and I applied it to the people here in Pennsylvania. And I'm going to get the numbers incorrect, but the overall point should kind of make sense. So if I remember correctly, I think your chances as a young male in the age range of 18 to 29, your risk of getting myocarditis from having COVID as a young male in, once again, the under 30 group was about 1 in 300,000, if I remember correctly. If you got vaccinated, then your chance of myocarditis went to about 1 in 32,500. Still very, very low, but you notice, I mean, that's, what would that be, like an 100 times increase in the overall risk? Mm-hmm. So it's still very, very low. And this is kind of where I think, where I kind of have to push back on the people that are more of my orientation that say like, okay, well, this is like a population control device. I'm like, okay, well, if it is, it's doing a bad job, but we shouldn't say that it's, there's no harm at all, because clearly the way that we have to look at all of this stuff is like risk versus reward, where young men, you're not at risk of dying from COVID. I mean, that's just, anybody that's saying anything different is lying or probably trying to tell you something, right?
You're right.
But you know, if you're an elderly person, okay, well, there are some data saying that, hey, maybe the risk reward ratio here is a little bit different for you, because, you know, if you're in the 65 to 80 year old range, the most likely cause of death to humans is heart disease. So is your chance of heart disease going to be higher or lower from taking that vaccine versus, you know, if you were to get COVID and that kills you that way? That's going to be upon each individual person. But once again, without informed consent, without people having long conversations with their doctors who are willing to kind of look at the, you know, each individual situation, we can't really come to that answer.
Right. Well, and also too, a lot of the data, we just didn't know right out the bat when it was coming out, and there wasn't a lot of transparency. And I think that was the source of a lot of distrust. I actually posted a study at the beginning of the pandemic in 2020. Public trust in medical professionals was around 70%. 4 years later, by April 2024, it had dropped to 40%. I'm sorry, it dropped 30% in that time. Okay. So it was at 70% and then dropped to 40%. So it dropped 30% in 4 years, which is bonkers. That is a significant decrease in public trust. And this was across all 50 states and all socioeconomic groups, which is quite astounding. And I think a lot of that is not necessarily the issue with the product. Yes, there are concerns with the product for sure. You go on X and you can see it all over the place, but it was the issue and how it was handled and how the individuals that were leading the charge weren't being completely transparent and sharing all the data. And the people that were asking questions were shamed or silenced into submission, especially the medical professionals that were raising concerns. So I think that hopefully, and I love your hat because I am very intently watching RFK's confirmation process right now. Hopefully later tonight or tomorrow, we'll have some good news. But I think that's why people rallied around RFK Jr., because they just want some transparency. They just want to be treated like adults and informed consumers to make the decisions for themselves, to assess the risks and benefits themselves, because they are the most intimate with their personal situation. They know their own health. They know their own children's health, and they have the responsibility and authority to exercise that choice to accept delay or decline.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, there are definitely some areas in the whole health conversation where I've heard RFK discuss where I know he's an absolute, he's out to lunch on the situation. But that being said, the fact that at least he's been probably one of the only huge prominent figures in the, you know, public sphere, really, that's been discussing how bad our health is as a country. Mm-hmm. It's just majorly, majorly important. And if for nothing else, I think that's huge, because I mean, when we're talking about, you know, people say the number all the time, but I think it's like 88% of the population is considered medical or not obese, but they don't consider them metabolically well. Mm-hmm. Clearly there's an issue here. And you know, do I believe there's poisons in all the foods? Not necessarily. I just think that our brains and our bodies aren't designed to be in this hyperpalatable food environment and to be around all the technology and to work sedentary jobs like we do. Like, we are in a completely different environment than we were even 200 years ago. Mm-hmm. And because of that, we just, evolution moves very, very slowly. So that way we're not able to kind of keep up with this. But, this conversation of kind of being transparent with the public is hugely important because, like in 2020, I do think there's going to be a lot of backlash to people, and it's going to harm a lot of people because they don't trust their doctors as much as they used to anymore. And are there bad doctors out there? Yeah, absolutely. But I do think a lot are kind of looking out for their patients and also trying to, manage their time appropriately. But much like you said, in 2020, when people were being silenced for questioning things, it's understandable that people are like, all right, well, now fuck you. I'm going over to the alternative medicine space where there's definitely quacks there too. But, hey, maybe some people are getting well, and if people get well through seeking other means of, medicine, all right. But, it's kind of like the public health establishment really did this themselves.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, I was getting messages because I started my account in fall of 2020. So I was in the heat of all of this, and I actually was deleted a week before the federal mandate. My website was actually blocked from all Department of Defense computers. So I got hit pretty hard with the censorship. Yeah. But I had women messaging me that were pregnant, and they were skipping prenatal appointments because every single prenatal appointment, their doctor was pushing the COVID vaccine so hard that it was making them anxious. Their blood pressure was shooting through the roof. So they were skipping it. And to me, that's a huge failure. If you have a woman that is pregnant, skipping essential healthcare visits where they do check that blood pressure, they do check their urine for proteins and, for preeclampsia. And there's all these things that happen in a prenatal appointment. To me, it didn't seem like it was worth risking that as a medical professional, to risk that relationship and that opportunity to track a prenatal woman's health for a product that was being pushed on the public. And we really didn't have that much safety data on. I know they said they did, but they really didn't, especially now what's coming out so much more that we've seen of women being affected by it. And that it didn't stop transmission. That was the other thing. In my opinion, I don't think that it should have been brought to market in such a way that it was. And I do think that there were plenty of safety signals that it passed where other products, I actually did a post on this. There were other products that were pulled from the market way sooner that had safety signals than this product has. But again, I'm a fierce advocate of informed consent. I know that there are people out there that have so much anxiety about COVID that the COVID boosters are a sense of comfort to them. And that is something that they choose to accept because it's a product on the free market. And I want to respect that for them. So I always say that I am a person that will welcome anyone, whether you accept, delay, or decline any or all medical products. And even if my entire community was full of people that accepted the products, I would be happy because then at least they would have the informed consent that they deserve.
Of course. Yeah. And kind of like we were saying earlier, they really kind of built this house of cards, if you will, where they forced a product out there. And I think a lot of the skepticism kind of arose from the fact that people were being compelled to take it against their own choice. Whereas, I've heard somebody say this, and obviously I do think there was a lot of malevolence throughout this process, but somebody I follow and really look up to, his name is Lane Norton, where he said, the public got to see science done in a very public and sloppy way, where they were trying to build the ship while they were sailing the ship down the water. Where the only thing that I think that leaves out, though, is that you're also telling people that they have to get on the ship or else they're going to die otherwise,
or they don't have a job.
Exactly.
Or they can't go to school.
Right. You're going to die. You can't go to school. You can't do all this. But then come to find out a couple of years later, oh, this really, for the vast majority of people, especially people under, 60, 70 years old, really didn't do anything for them. And in some cases, it might have genuinely harmed people or ended their life entirely. And, for that, understandably, a lot of people are kind of looking outside, and kind of thinking like, all right, well, I have to do something else now at this point. So I've heard you talk about Ozempic a little bit. So What are your thoughts surrounding that? And how much do you know about the safety data from the resources that you've read?
Well, for have you seen the Hims and Her ad for the Super Bowl?
No.
Okay, so I actually just did a huge series on this because it was baffling to me. So there's a company out called Hims and Hers, and they are a telehealth company, and they take generic medications for anxiety, erectile dysfunction, other different things like better hair and skin and things like that. And then they also compound GLP-1, semaglutide, which is in Wegovy, Ozempic, things like that. So they actually just did a Super Bowl commercial. And the first half of it was like the very MAHA, Make America Healthy Again. It was talking about the obesity epidemic. It was talking about how our food is toxic and, you know, the lifestyle that we have is not healthy. And then the second half of the ad talked about the solution to that problem is to have better access and affordability to these GLP-1s. And so I actually did a post about the website and how the branding was so good that the person, the designer behind it is a genius. They did such a fantastic job. However, they failed to take very important parts of the inserts for GLP-1s that you are known to be at risk for and to put it on the website. And there could be some FTC violations just on not making that well known. It'll be interesting to me if they do get hit with that. I'm not sure if they will, but one of the things that's really important to understand is for Ozempic is the thyroid risk for sure. That's a black box warning on the top of the insert. And they used to be called black box warning. They're called box warnings now, but it's just a big black box that's on the top of the insert. And it's animal studies that have found that animals that were injected with GLP-1s were found to have thyroid cancer. And it's really interesting to me because when I was reading parts of the insert, there were different things that you might experience if you're on GLP-1s that could indicate that you are at risk or an elevated risk of thyroid cancer. And one of them was hoarseness of voice. And I actually follow a lot of influencers and I know that they're on Ozempic. And then I've started to notice that their voice is getting more hoarse. So I do hope they are at least seeking some medical advice to check that out. And then there are a whole bunch of other things that have been recently added just in the last year. I did my Ozempic post, I think a year or two ago. And it's obviously inserts are constantly changed whenever the FDA forces the manufacturer to add more warnings on there. I could even pull it up if you wanted me to, but there's the issue of bone density. So people are at increased risk for osteoporosis being on Ozempic. There's obviously the muscle tone loss is a big concern. And one thing I don't think a lot of people understand, at least when they're advocating for Ozempic, they talk about how it like lessens the food noise and it lessens the kind of obsession with food and it helps them to achieve their goals. But the FDA has only approved Ozempic to be used in conjunction with a calorie deficit and a weightlifting program. And so it's not supposed to be used by itself. And that's something that I think is a lot of people are missing. They think that it's just Ozempic is the answer and it's not. That's not how it's indicated. And also too, Ozempic itself is being used off label. It's only meant to be used for diabetics. And I think that gets kind of lost in translation too. And then also now you throw in this compounded semaglutide that's completely used off label. That is not FDA approved at all. And so if you are going to use any kind of Ozempic compounded, make sure you absolutely vet the source that you're getting it from because that is not covered protection-wise from the FDA.
Of course. So I've been all over the map when it comes to Ozempic. I think I've generally kind of came out to the conclusion that like, I think it's going to be more net positive than net negative. But the one thing that you highlighted there that I think is very, 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 very important is that it should be used in conjunction with a, you know, exercise routine. I had Max Coleman on, who studied under Brad Schoenfeld, who's probably the world's leading, muscle building scientist and researcher. And I was very skeptical, and he kind of I don't want to say like a back and forth, but he's like, okay, so the first 5-year trial came out. This is probably like a year and a half, maybe 2 years ago. And he was like, the results look pretty good, but you know, we're also kind of talking about, you know, as compared to what, if people are going to spend a lifetime being obese, then the side effects of Ozempic are preferable. If you experience the side effects, you know, are preferable than to that of being obese for a lifetime. But like you said, the problem is that, we've told people to exercise and eat better, and they generally don't. Mm-hmm. Does that mean I recommend somebody just go take Ozempic to lose weight? No, absolutely not. And obviously this isn't medical advice, but like, in my opinion, I think you should probably try to do it naturally first. Once you learn those habits and you still can't lose weight, okay, maybe that should be considered. But at the same time, we're also kind of looking at an obesity crisis here in the States where nothing has worked. I mean, you know, it's 97% of diets fail within 3 years, where it's like, you know, after the first year, 75% of the people gain the weight back, second year, 88%. And then after the third year, it's like almost 100% of people gain all the weight back. It's a complex question, but, you know, I don't think anybody knows the answer. And I don't think Ozempic's a silver bullet because, you know, clearly even in some of the studies I read, I think I did a video on one where they had, I want to say it was around 10,000 people in the study and about 1,400 people had to drop out. These numbers might be completely wrong, but it wasn't a very, very large amount of people, but it was enough that you would know, not like, you know, less than like 0.1%. It was probably to the tune of anywhere from like 5 to 10% of people had to drop out of the studies because their side effects were so severe. It's very, you know, individual, but, you know, the rest of the people did well enough and, you know, better than obviously the placebo. But once again, I don't think that people are being given the full context of what these treatments are. And like you said, they're not always being given in conjunction with diet and exercise, where people are just kind of getting this hand out like candy.
Yeah. And I'll speak anecdotally. I have a few friends that are using it. And
for a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
You know, I respect their choice. I understand. I get it. Like, I'm struggling with postpartum weight loss resistance. I've worked with a nutritionist. I've worked with a physical trainer. I know that my issue isn't necessarily diet and exercise. I know it's hormone related. I have high cortisol levels. I've had, you know, some mold exposure. So those are things that I'm working with my provider on, and I know that I'm on the right track for it. So I get the temptation of it for sure, because that would be great. That would be, you know, I read one study and it was talking about how oral GLP-1s aren't as effective because the compliance is low. And so a 1-week injectable has higher compliance levels. So that's what makes it more effective. But for the friends that I know and that I talk to that experience or that have been on it, just the psychology behind it is very alarming to me. I have one friend that's on it, and we were sitting at a table and we were talking. We're all moms, and she was talking about how it's really helpful for her because then it allows her to eat normally, because she was pre-diabetic. She went on it and then she had her baby, so she was off of it, and then she went back on it. She ended up being diabetic again, or becoming diabetic, and she said she had a plate in front of her and she said, "This allows me to eat normal." But then I looked at her plate and it was full of carbs and sugar, and she didn't know, she hadn't been trained that protein was so important for her, especially she had just had a baby. And so for me, I think there's a lack of public education. I don't think many women know how to eat, especially when they are pregnant and postpartum, and how much more protein we need and how much more nutrients have been depleted while we're breastfeeding. I don't think that's known large. I know because I've done the research and I've read, you know, everything about it. And if you haven't yet, Lily Nichols, she's a registered dietitian. She's fantastic. She has several books, one on fertility, one on pregnancy, and one on gestational diabetes. I have all of them. They're just fantastic. And she talks about how it's important to make sure that you're supplementing those nutrients through food, bioavailable food. And then if you can't get it through your food, to find other options, either through supplements or tinctures or something like that. But so that was one experience with my friend, and just realizing how she was really depending on this drug, and she's going to be on it her whole life, because she said that when she gets off of it, she gains more weight back than when she was first on it. So to me, I think when you're deciding if you're going to be on this, you need to decide up front, is this going to be a long-term treatment plan? Or, you know, are you going to put into place, there are certain ways that you can deal with the titration, and maybe you won't have that sudden weight gain when you do get off of it. And then I have another friend that's been on it, and she had drastic weight loss. I mean, very, very drastic weight loss. And I asked her if she had had any side effects. And she said, yeah, the nausea is really bad, but I feel like as a woman, we're just nauseous anyway. And so it's just normal. And I said, wait, no, it's not normal to be nauseous all the time. And so I think that the psychology of it is where I have a big issue, is that, yes, if you want to use this tool with your provider and be informed about the potential risks and be alert if you're getting hoarseness of voice, or if you are having issues because you're vomiting so much, and now you might have gum issues and teeth issues, and maybe you have eyesight issues, that you need to be very aware of. But to understand that it's not this, like you said, this silver bullet that's just going to fix all your problems, because I think that's where you kind of get more into like the eating disorder mindset. Right. And that to me is very scary, especially for women postpartum, to be in that mindset.
Yeah, absolutely. And you brought up their wound as well. And we know that women are at a much higher risk of osteoporosis. And especially if, you know, like you said, your plate's full of carbs and sugar, which like aren't inherently bad by themselves. But when you lack, you know, sufficient fiber, sufficient protein, and other, you know, just, you know, low calorie dense foods, like your fruits and vegetables and stuff like that, and you're just, you know, trying to eat your regular, you know, junk food, standard American diet, and you're just supplementing with Ozempic so that way you don't eat too much. It's like, okay, well, why don't we look at your diet as a whole and see if, hey, maybe if we give you more lean proteins and maybe some more fruits and vegetables and don't soak them in oils and stuff like that, then see what your diet's like. And if you still have problems, okay, well, at least now you're addressing the diet portion. But like, if you're just using Ozempic, it's like, to put it crudely, but using abortion as birth control, right? Where like you're not addressing the problem correctly, like you should be. And I think that's a very, very dangerous path to go down as well. And, you know, I think RFK being in the position that he's in, it's funny because I know he got grilled for, you know, being anti-vaccine, but, you know, he stated that he wants just kind of like you said, more informed consent. I think that's everything. I think that's something that I think everybody should be able to get on board with, like, hey, maybe every treatment isn't for everybody. Like, I wouldn't tell somebody that isn't working out to take beta-alanine and creatine, because what good is it going to do you? Like, yeah, you're going to get cognitive benefits from creatine, but like, you know, it's not really going to do anything for you. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we need to once again tailor our approach to health, fitness, and even medical decisions to each individual. And having more information really is, you know, a huge part of that.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's really alarming to me too, when I see, when I first did that post, at the time, there was just this absolute certainty that there were no adverse reactions to Ozempic. And I got grilled in the comments and in my DMs and saying, no, I'm on Ozempic. I don't have any issues. I don't have any nausea. I don't have any blind, you know, anything like that. And it wasn't until recently where now there's an industry of products that support the side effects of Ozempic. So like fiber, I think it's Respira is the brand. They just came out at the beginning, or maybe in December timeframe. And now it's okay to talk about the adverse events because there's a company to support that. So I just find that very interesting to me. And I have a business background. So when I look at that, I'm thinking, okay, I think that's more of, okay, you don't want to have the solution to the problem, or you don't want to admit the problem until you have a solution to it, but now they have a solution to it, so the problem's okay to talk about, which I just find always pretty interesting as I'm reading inserts.
Of course. Yeah. It's kind of like some supplement companies will sell a pre-workout with, you know, 450 milligrams caffeine and then sell you a sleep aid right afterwards. It's like, okay, well, you know, like I take pre-workout, I drink a lot of caffeine, but like, okay, well, know when to, you know, taper it off. Probably shouldn't be having that, you know, right around lunchtime, or, you know, 6 hours, 3 or 4 hours before you're going to go to bed. Don't be pounding the energy drinks and stuff like that. The sleep aid isn't going to help. You're going to sleep like shit anyway. So right. You've mentioned inserts a few times, and I actually hadn't heard of them or really knew about them. And, you know, us stupid guys, we just don't go to the doctor. We just kind of, you know, wait till shit's finally broke until we feel bad enough. Then we go to the doctor and, you know, hopefully they can kind of treat us, or they just tell us to go sleep it off. Elaborate on what inserts are and why should we know what they are and why should we care?
Yeah, that's a great, actually, my husband has not been to a dentist since he was in college. And so I asked him the other day, I said, well, are you okay? And he's like, no, I've had a clicking in my jaw for like 4 years. I'm like, well, go to a dentist. Why are you not doing that? But anyway, so manufacturer inserts are the legal documents that are tied to a medical product. When it's being introduced to the FDA, it's called a new drug application, and eventually that turns into a manufacturer insert. And they have to have, for all prescription medications, so those are the ones where you go to your doctor and they write on that pad, or they give you a prescription and then you have to go to the pharmacy and get it. Every single one of those medications, or if it's a vaccine, have to have a manufacturer insert on the FDA website. There are like the folded up pieces of paper that are really super fine print that you need a magnifying glass to get. I don't mess with any of those. Everything's on the FDA website. So it's really easy. I have a free training course called How to Read an Insert, and I teach you step by step. I screenshot exactly how to find manufacturer inserts, and then each part of the insert, because it's through the FDA, there's sections that are standardized across every single medical product. And so once you learn what those sections are and what it means whenever there's something in that section, so we'll talk about contraindications. So those are conditions that the manufacturer is telling you as the consumer, hey, if you have this medical condition, it might increase your risk for a certain adverse reaction, or there's warning and precautions and like hypersensitivities. If you have a hypersensitivity to this one ingredient, this ingredient is in this product as a filler ingredient. So just be aware you might have anaphylactic shock or anything like that, or if you have circulatory issues or things that you just need to be aware of. So what I do is I teach you what those sections are. So then when you go through each one, then you can say, okay, this makes sense. I talk about drug interactions. So if you're on other kind of prescriptions, you can go through there and see if that might interact with you. Food interactions, there's actually a lot of foods, or there's a lot of drugs that interact with vitamin C, that interact with things like grapefruit juice. And so it's just good for you to be aware, like, is a great example is Adderall. On the manufacturer insert, it says that if you take ascorbic acid, vitamin C, when you take your Adderall, the effectiveness of your Adderall will be limited. So that's just stuff that you need to know, just to make sure that you're getting your money's worth with your Adderall, because you don't want to take it and then it not work because you had, you know, a protein bar with vitamin C in it. So I just go through each part of that's insert to train you how to read it. So then whatever you're researching, you can go and find the inserts yourself. Say you're in the ER because you got in a car accident or something happened and they want to put you on some kind of drug, then you can quickly pop out your phone and research the insert. I teach you how to do all that yourself. And then I also have on my website over 50 analytical deep dives into different pharmaceuticals, from over the counters like Tylenol, acetaminophen, to all the vaccines that are on the schedule. And then like Zofran or Zoloft and Ambien and Valium. I did Viagra. That was a pretty interesting one. Got a lot of interesting comments on that one. Ozempic as well. And so I just cover, if people comment and say, hey, can you research Zyrtec? I'm like, yeah, sure. And then I kind of put the research that I found from other studies or other parts of the .gov resources. And then I put all of that basically into a book last year just to make it easier. So then if you don't have access to the internet, then you can reference it as well. But it's actually a lot easier than a lot of people think. It takes about 2 to 3 hours to go through my course and through my book. And then afterward, you have those skills so you can make the best decisions for yourself, for a family member, for your children, for a friend. I don't know how many times I've been talking with a friend and they said, yeah, this doctor gave me this antibiotic. And then I pulled up the insert and I kind of went through it with them, and you know, turns out that they had a contraindication, and it was good that we went through it because it could have led to heart failure or something like that. So that's basically what I do, is take the inserts and just make them a little bit more digestible as a patient or a parent. Mm-hmm.
So one thing that I think might be kind of interesting to go down would be, I don't want to speak to individual people's motivations, but maybe we could talk a little bit more about the meta of it. So you mentioned having people that you know that kind of said, oh, well, we went through and found like a specific indicator saying that like this could give me the potential for heart disease. Do you think that doctors are kind of being taught this because like, hey, this drug company kind of lobbied this and that's why it's there? Or do you think it's more of like, doctors kind of go to learning seminars and they kind of learn about specific drugs, and then people learn about these drugs and say, okay, well, this is kind of like applicable for what this person's feeling here or there? Or do you think it's some kind of combination of both? Which I know that's like a very specific kind of question, but what are your general thoughts?
That's a great question. I love that you thought about that. So the way that it works for inserts, they're either going to be internal driven changes from the FDA. So say there's like a safety signal in their surveillance system that they had a ton of reports that myocarditis or something like for Adderall, there's a warning for children that are on it long-term, they can have growth issues. So they don't have height or weight issues with their growth. So something signaled it in the FDA side of things. And so they force the manufacturer to update it. And then sometimes the manufacturer does a post-marketing study, either through their own reasons or maybe the government pressured them to do a study, and then they take that study, the information, and they put it on the insert, and that kind of alerts additional warnings. Sometimes it's them being proactive and sometimes it's them forced that they have to add it on there. There are tons of medical journals out there where they do research, and that can kind of influence what gets added to the inserts as well. So it really just kind of depends on what industry too. Some of the, like the vaccine inserts are going to be a little bit more bare than you would see like over the counters or some of the other prescriptions. It kind of just depends on if there's a lot of pressure for research in that particular segment of the industry.
Okay. Yeah, that's very interesting. I think people kind of make the wrong assumption that it's all profit driven. And I do think there are noble motives amongst, I don't even want to say all or a lot or none, but I do think that generally people are looking out for their patients, but you kind of also have to look how their DAC is stacked, their deck is stacked for them, you know, for or against them. Do you find that people find themselves, after kind of learning about inserts, declining a lot more, or do you think that they're a little bit more neutral, like they still kind of take everything, or what's kind of been your experience?
Well, I think because I go at it from an angle of just informed consent and that everyone's welcome, I have a mix. I mean, I have a mix of people who are diehard, no pharmaceuticals ever. They think all of it's poison. And then I have the people who accept all of it. I actually have a lot of pharmacists that follow me because they aren't taught to read inserts. They're taught to read certain parts of the inserts, but not the inserts as a whole. And then I have a lot of, I would say probably about 40 to 60% of my community are medical professionals. So like RNs, pediatricians, and then we have, you know, of course, naturopaths and chiropractic and all these different types of people. I actually really love how diverse our community is because it's great. I detest groupthink, and I want to hear from everybody and want to hear their personal experiences and what they see with their at the clinician level and what they see in hospitals and what they see in different, you know, private doctor's offices and things like that. So yes, it's definitely a mix of different people. But what I love the most is that nobody feels, at least from my point of things, shamed into doing something, because I'm very adamant that if you don't accept a product because somebody is forcing you not to accept it, that still is medical coercion in my mind. Mm. It's the same as someone telling you that you have to take a product. So I do try to police that as much as I can in my comment sections.
Yeah. And you, obviously you're not responsible for your audience. And that's something that I just drives me absolutely insane when I see people saying that, like, oh, well, your community is filled with Nazis or this or that. It's like, okay, well, I can't control who just happens to scroll across my, you know, my Twitter, my YouTube or anything like that. I can't help that. I have no control over that unless you want me to start blocking everybody, which I do block people, but it's not like that. I don't do that so that way they don't see my stuff. I do it because I don't want to see their stuff or they've annoyed me. So I kind of mentioned earlier, like, I think there is going to be a lot of backlash, or I shouldn't say backlash, but more of a, we're going to see side effects from people just being contrarian in the respect of, you know, the medical community had so disgraced itself and people rejecting things outright, kind of like you were saying, where people just say, oh, it's all poison. And I'm glad to hear that at least from your perspective, it seems like people are kind of more so thinking for themselves rather than just kind of joining in a group think, because that's something that I've personally tried to battle against, where I see people just, they find their side, and if the other side is saying something, then, you know, they're automatically the opposite of whatever that is, rather than just saying like, oh, no, why don't I kind of research this and learn for myself and determine what the best course of action for me is.
Absolutely. And I talk about logical fallacies a lot because I think that's very prevalent on all sides of the conversation. Of course. And so I'll say that the appeal to authority kind of applies that if authority figure says something and you automatically disregard what they say, that's still a logical fallacy. They right. might be saying something that's true. You just have to go and verify it yourself. And then there could be someone that you do respect as an authority figure. They might be saying something that isn't true. And so I don't think we should blindly follow anyone. And that's one of the biggest things that when I know, you know, the Make America Healthy Again movement was kind of having some infighting early December or late December, early January timeframe. And I was saying that, no, we should not be just abdicating that authority to anyone. We still need to make sure that we research all of these products ourselves, that we can make the best decisions. And the infighting will be our downfall. This is if America does not come back from the chronic disease epidemic that we're currently experiencing, it won't be because of pharmaceutical lobbying. It won't be because of financial conflicts of interest at the federal or clinician level. It'll be because we're eating each other alive, trying to figure out the best way to change things. So whenever I talk about how to have productive conversations about medical products, I always say to at least try to assume the best intentions of the person that you're talking to. I truly do believe that most of us want what is best for ourselves, our families, and our communities. We just disagree on how to get there. And so if we could come to the table a little bit more level-headed, and I get that bitterness, believe me, being deleted and going through everything I went through, I get that bitterness, but that will consume us and it will rob us of the present moment, and it won't help our future children to have a, you know, a better landscape for them.
Sure. And you kind of brought it back to some of the more political figures, if you will, or perhaps the political movement, maybe not specifically that, but you know, I was excited to see RFK kind of being put in his position, but I think one of the other people that I was very, very enheartened to see put it ahead of the NIH was Jay Bhattacharya, which, if you're not familiar with him, he drafted the Great Barrington Declaration, which was basically just saying like, hey, the idea when it comes to another disease outbreak like this should be, you know, we protect the old and elderly, and then basically herd immunity for everybody else who can tolerate the disease, which, you know, seems like common sense to me. And I think anybody that, you know, kind of knows how these things kind of go, to see him at the head of the NIH was very, very good to me. And I think that was specifically because Ron DeSantis had raised his profile in 2020, having conversations with him about, you know, lockdowns and stuff like that. So what do you think the next 4 years and hopefully eight and beyond kind of looks like when it comes to the general conversation of health and pharmaceuticals?
I think it's going to be really rough. The first 2 years, I think it's going to be really, really, really rough. And I say this only because I was in the military for 5 years and I worked in the National Capital Region. And so I know what it's like to work with government employees that have been there for decades. They've been through multiple presidential administrations, and it's hard. It's really, really hard to shake up that foundation. And, you know, there's a lot with the NIH, FDA, CDC, HHS, all of it. It's a very broad enterprise, and I think it's going to be very hard to remove the amount of financial conflicts of interest that are currently in my opinion, corrupting science and good science. I mean, the science that we all were taught in high school about having a hypothesis and having unbiased observation of the natural world, that's currently not happening. And we could talk for hours about how that's not happening at large across the federal agencies. So I do think it's going to be pretty hard the first 2 years. And I think people are going to get really upset because things aren't happening as quickly as they want them to. But I just hope and pray that the right people are going to get in the right positions and they are able to have clarity of mind and discernment and wisdom to be able to make those perfectly timed decisions when they need to make them. And hopefully as a society, we will just rally behind them and continue to be vocal. I mean, the fact that I said this before too, I actually, you know, I'm an independent. I don't fully align with any political party. I'm probably more libertarian side of things. And for me, even if I don't agree 100% with all of RFK Jr.'s policies and where he stands on a lot of the things, he completely changed the game on the narrative and being able to openly discuss a lot of these topics. Me coming out and breaking my anonymity, I was anonymous for 4 years. And a big reason why I decided to show my face and start going on podcasts was because he made it part of his political platform to question the status quo and to ask really uncomfortable questions. So I'm appreciative of that. Again, whether I agree with everything, no, I don't. But I'm glad at least the culture is shifting. So, I think it's going to be hard at first, but I think we're going to get over that hump. And then things, once everything is aligned the way that it needs to be aligned, and we have that good science in there, and we have those intellectually curious people that genuinely just want to find the data and analyze it without any influences or preconceived notions on how it should come out, that's when we're going to see our health just completely 180. And I'm really excited for us as a whole to get to that part. So I see it, the little light at the end of the tunnel. We still have a little bit of tunnel to go through, but I do see that light. And I'm definitely a lot more optimistic than I was a year ago.
Yeah, well, I definitely hope you're right. You know, I want to be respectful of your time. I think that's actually a pretty dang good place to kind of wrap it up there. Definitely on a high note. I want to pull up this comment here from my buddy, Jacob. All right, I'm sold. I'll check out just the inserts website. Definitely a worthwhile source to have in the arsenal. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. I'll give you a couple more questions and obviously the final word. What does health look like to you?
Health looks like to me being able to have the freedom to follow your dreams. And the fact of that, whatever you want to set your mind to, whether you want to be an electrician, whether you want to be a president, whether you want to be a mother or raise chickens, that you do that without having any inhibitors, whether that be your cardiovascular health, your the ability to run up the stairs, pick up after your kids, whatever that might be, that you're not held back from that dream, whatever that dream might be.
Beautiful. All right. Well, where can everybody find you, support you, and all that good stuff?
Everything is at justtheinserts.com. I have my free training course, no email required. I actually have a motherhood guide as well. So from preconception to pregnancy to postpartum, I go over everything that you would need. So my wife might be interested in that. Mm-hmm. And then I have my book, Well Considered, a handbook for making informed medical decisions. Everything is on the website. And I actually am now working on a provider directory for pro-informed consent providers. So these are all medical providers that have opted into the directory, and they say that they will honor informed consent for their patients. It's an interactive map. We're in growth phase right now, and we're working 24/7 to get it up and running. So you can find that on the website too.
Nice. Well, I like all of that quite a bit, and I really, really enjoyed this conversation today. So I think we'll close her out there if you don't got anything else.
Yeah, no, thank you so much for having me.
Beautiful. All right. Well, like I said, I appreciate the conversation today. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. Hopefully everybody enjoyed and learned a lot. I know I definitely did. I know I will be definitely checking out some of the resources that you have available, Alexandra. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a good night. You too.